Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time you're listening to this, wherever you are listening to this. This is Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk. How are you guys? It is the middle of May, and how time flies in 2024. This is episode 48, The Atomic Drop. And this is the episode where we talk about June 1983 in the Mid-South Wrestling Association and how we go from Junkyard Dog versus Ted DiBiase in the Eternal Feud to a couple of new feuds that are going to carry the load as a, talk about a double main go, right? We're going to transition to Butch Reed versus the Junkyard Dog and Ted DiBiase, you know, continuing in the direction where we've been going, where he battles his former tag team partner, former Rat Pack member, Hacksaw Duggan, who has now gotten too big for his britches and spun off with his hippie ways, right? So it's going to be a great month, a great episode, and one actually that I got to witness live when I got to Houston in, it must have been late June or early July, and on the bicycle we were a couple of weeks behind what would have been the first running shows in the New Orleans market and other places. So I'm really excited to talk about this episode. And first, we have a very special sponsor that I'm also happy to talk about. It's still me in a way, but it's a business that I own with a partner, Cheyenne Phillips, and some investors as well. And it's called A Cooperstown Christmas Movie, Inc. It's the property that owns the script that's I've been developing for the last couple of years for A Cooperstown Christmas. And we're going to have a Christmas in July concert and fundraiser at the Lake House in Richfield, New York. It's on Canandaigua Lake, and we're hoping for a beautiful day, Sunday, July 7th, 2024. The doors will open at 2 p.m., concert 3 to 7:30. King Kanye, Cat Hook the Band, and Dan Toth and his band Audio Riot. Dan, I think, is a former tryout contestant for American Idol, and Cheyenne was in his video Key in the Door, and I told her it's just a wonderful video, but it's also like a great model reel for her because it's like, you know, it looks like the 1980s Heart video or something where she's just in water the entire time and just, you know, looking like a beautiful model. So she's the star of A Cooperstown Christmas. I met her a couple of years ago at a Women in Film event that we put on. And she's unique in that she's three coasts, with the third coast being Sydney, Australia. And that's where she is much of the time. So if you've seen me on Twitter talking about trying to convert Sydney time to New York time to LA time to have meetings, that's what I'm talking about. But any event, this movie is a Hallmark-like rom-com in which she leaves New York City, where she's, of course, a powerful executive, and goes back home to Cooperstown to her little sister's wedding and has to face sort of the demons of her past. So we're really excited about the movie, and we've been raising money for a couple of years. We've missed, I guess you would say, a couple of windows to make the movie, but I believe in divine timing, so I'm not worried about that at all. But this was one of the ideas that we didn't do last year, and we decided, you know what? That's a really good idea. Let's have a fundraiser and just have some fun with it. So there's going to be a free shuttle from Cooperstown and Richfield Springs at 1:30, 2 o'clock, 2:30, and 3 o'clock. And then there'll be a shuttle at the end at 7:30 and 8 to take everybody back to their cars. And then anybody that buys a ticket gets to register to be a paid extra in the movie. No guarantees. You know, if we're shooting the wedding scene on a Tuesday and we need 100 people and you're not available on Tuesday because you got to work, well, you know, that's on you. But we are going to cast from this, and we'll also pass the casting list on to other people in the film commission that I'm a part of, Film Otsego, so that when the next group of filmmakers comes into Otsego County, they have a list of extras that they can cast from right here at home or in the region. So anyone within the sound of my voice, it's funny, we have a thing in upstate New York called upstate distance or upstate time. And it's basically like, if something's 2 or 3 hours away, you might go do it on a Saturday afternoon, because what else are you going to do? And then also, you know, like if you need something that day and you can't wait for Amazon to get here in 48 hours or something, you know, you might go to the Home Depot someplace down in the valley, or you might go to the mall, you know, an hour or an hour and a half away, just because it's upstate time. And, you know, what else are you going to be doing on a weekend day or something when you really, really need that now, or at least, you know, in the next 4 to 6 hours? So what I'm saying is we are within an hour. The lake house in Richfield is probably 45 minutes away from Utica. It's probably 70 miles from Albany. It's a couple of hours from the Hudson Valley and probably 230 miles from New York City. Probably about 250, 260 miles from Boston, you know, much closer from the western part of Massachusetts and from Vermont. And, you know, not for nothing, it is very close to Route 90 and the interstate thruway. So it's pretty good. And also very, very close. It's so close that I think we've had events there celebrating historic Route 20. It's right down the road from historic Route 20 in New York. So it's going to be a great day. Like I said, the afternoon on the lake, Canandaigua Lake, little Finger Lake looking thing here. Not in the Finger Lakes because we're a little too far east, but one of the two Finger Lake looking things that we have in the Cooperstown area. A Cooperstown Christmas Movie Inc. presents Christmas in July concert and fundraiser at the Lake House on Canandaigua Lake, July 7th, 2024. Thank you guys, and I hope you'll be there. I would love to meet you and talk wrestling with you in between songs from the band and me talking about the movie and just trying to raise enthusiasm and some money for it as well. There is a QR code on the little ad that I have, and it's up on all of my social media, so it's easy to find at this moment. It's a big, big, big part of what I'm hyping in real life world. So thank you guys for humoring me with the ad. And then without further ado, let us move on to the atomic drop. And that is actually a double entendre, not a good one, a bad one. Because we're going to talk a little bit, especially at the end of the last episode, about the Junkyard Dog and the switch to the song The Atomic Dog. And I didn't understand it at the time. I just thought it was, I liked it, because that's what I was hearing the second time I was really watching the Junkyard Dog in Mid-South. But how it is symbolic of the fact that this is the beginning of Junkyard Dog cooling off just a little bit in Mid-South. And we see Hacksaw Duggan sort of like a racehorse overtaking him just a little bit. And we'll get to Bill Watts' comments about this once we get head on into the actual Butch Reed stuff. But we will start where we left off last time, episode 195. Like the one at the end of last month, this one was filmed May 25th in Shreveport, but this one would have aired June 4th or later. And we start with Boyd and Ted DiBiase, who we were warned last week was going to be Boyd's co-host this week. I think Bill Watts even apologized to Boyd, and Boyd said, well, if he keeps it on the straight and narrow, we'll be all right. And I think at the end of the episode, Boyd might have even thanked Ted DiBiase for his insightful commentary. But at the beginning of the episode, he says now he's going to keep it on the straight and narrow. So Boyd has not forgotten. Boyd remembers what he talked about last week, quote unquote, which in this case would have been an hour earlier, or not even an hour earlier. It would have been just a few minutes earlier when they were filming the end of the previous episode. So it's funny because DiBiase has his cast on, and I didn't know this at the time. I don't know that I saw this specific episode, obviously, or when I've seen it. I don't know that I noticed it last time I was watching on the loop. I don't know that Mike and Brian talked about it. But DiBiase talks about going to the doctor, and the doctor is Dr. Beau Strange of Baton Rouge. And I just thought that is a worked name if I've ever heard one. And it's funny, the first time I wrote it on Twitter about that, I put a picture up, a vidcap or whatever, screen capture, and I said, you know, Beau, B-O. And then I thought about it for a minute, and I thought, no, that's not the Louisiana spelling. If this guy is a Louisiana native, it's like B-E-A-U, or there might even be an X in there somehow. In any event, so they talk about that, and then we get a big recap of King Kong Bundy's big angles. including his match with Tom Jones and the angle with Butch Reed. And a couple of things about this. One, again, I'm watching the Tom Jones match again, and Bill Watts is just, it's almost like Bill Watts is putting the shoe leather to Tom Jones. He's like, he's a big star in other places, but, you know, he's really having his not a good day today. He's really having a tough time here. And it just sort of made me cringe and wonder why Bill Watts, didn't like Tom Jones. But then the other thing is that when they come back from all the videos, Ted DiBiase is just laughing hysterically. I mean, you know, visually laughing at Butch Reed. And it continues, and he just verbally berates Butch Reed and, you know, almost talks about, you know, in a kayfabe way, what I was talking about last time we talked about this, which was like, you can't do something like that and step up and then lose. Like, you look bad. So anyway, but it's even more interesting when you see where this goes, and you guys probably know. So first up, we were going to have Butch Reed, but then Butch Reed is not here and he's backed out of the match. But the funny thing is, you guys know, this is taped the same day as they just had that big angle. So it's kind of weird that Butch Reed is not here, right? Now, I guess if you were a fan in the stands, you could say Butch Reed got angry and he left. Or Butch Reed got hurt in the match with King Kong Bundy and was not available. But, you know, portraying it as a different day and a different taped episode, they portray it as, we don't know where Butch Reed is. Butch Reed has disappeared. He's not here. And Johnny Rich is going to take his place against Tony Zane. And it, you know, I don't remember offhand anything except that Johnny Rich won the match with a 3/4 Nelson roll, which is, I have to say, not my cup of tea as a finisher. And not that you couldn't do the Oklahoma side roll as a finisher, but it's really not what he's doing here. He's doing a very simple amateur wrestling, trying to shoot the half, but it's not very clear. It's not very obvious visually that he's doing that, and I don't think it's very splashy or very impressive, but, you know, they're giving him credit for it, which I guess is good. And obviously, well, not obviously, but we have a big month of Johnny Rich ahead. So, you know, I guess take that and here we go, right? Let's go. So next up is Mr. Wrestling 2 and Mr. Olympia. And speaking of Let's Go, here's Let's Go Away. Here we go. Mr. Olympia, we've talked about this. This is where some people think of it as a disappointment. And I guess here's another way to think of it. Olympia comes into Mid-South at the end of 81, beginning of 82, and has a full year run as a babyface. And it's not until the very end, when they know that he's going to leave and turn, you know, when they know he's going to lose a loser leave town match, that he starts losing some matches on TV. And, you know, the first time when they do the angle with the loser leave town matches, everybody thinks it will be him that maybe drops the fall, or maybe it will be Matt Bourne that drops the fall because he's from out of town, so who cares? But it's Junkyard Dog. And then the second time, you know, by then Olympia is starting to put over people like Gino Hernandez on TV. But it's been a long time. He gets a full year run as a top babyface. And then he leaves for 60 days, goes back to Alabama, and he comes back in March. And now we're in June. So in April, in March, he wins the tournament to crown the North American title, you know, champion. But it's held up. So in April, he gets the main event at the Superdome. And he loses. In May, he wins the tag team titles with DiBiase. And now we're in June, and he's sort of getting pushed down the card. And this is really if you think about it, the end of about a year long angle on Mid-South. And it goes, I would say, it's not unnoted. They note it. But without Bill Watts to really drive it home, I don't know that they really do it justice that this is wrestling to beating Mr. Olympia. And, you know, he had so many issues with him over the last, you know, 6 months to a year. And, you know, the funny thing is it's like four knee lifts this time. And it happens despite Akbar jumping in the middle of the knee lift series and, you know, getting knocked out of the ring. And I mean, just you can almost picture the spot, right? Like Akbar flying into the ring, Akbar flying out of the ring. And then Olympia getting the knee lift and finally eating one and getting pinned. And, you know, we're going to have a month of Olympia just, you know, putting over everybody. And by the end of June, you know, early July, he's in Alabama. And that's that on Mr. Olympia. But like I was going to say, he does get the main event of the Superdome again. You know, he had it a couple times in tag teams with the Junkyard Dog. And this time he has it as a single, as the heel. And then he, you know, March, April, May, June, we were talking about this with the Ninja. How long, we were talking about this with Mr. Wrestling too when he turns. He gets a little longer, you know, but how long do top heels last? And, you know, if your answer is, well, Bob Roop or Ted DiBiase or Butch Reed, you know, those are the exceptions. Those are the exceptional ones. Not everyone does. And the other thing that you have to think about is, does Olympia give notice? Does Olympia, after spending 2 months in Alabama, come back to Mid-South for 4 months and go, you know what? It would be a whole lot easier on me and my family if I lived in Pensacola and all I had to do was come home every night. You know, I mean, I would think that. And if the answer is by July, I'm back in Pensacola or, you know, at worst, Birmingham. Actually, those are two very different things. If you know, you know. But yeah, so, you know, but my point is, you know, if you're going to go back to Alabama, you might as well do it. And it will make your life easier. You might not make as much money, but if they told him he's going to be figured in and they really want him back in Fuller Land, then I can see that happening. So this is the beginning of the end, but we'll see more of that over the next, actually 2 months, or at least 2 months worth of, next month's worth of shows, including a couple in the July cycle. So next up is Boris Z, number 12 or 13 on my top 10 Russian list, against Tom Jones. And again, poor Tom Jones. So for some reason, the interplay between Boyd and DiBiase, who probably have known each other all of Ted DiBiase's life, basically. Boyd probably knew Ted DiBiase when he was 3, 4, 5 years old coming to the matches with his dad, right? So Boyd says, I keep wanting to call him Burris Zirkov. And Ted DiBiase gets really annoyed with Boyd and says, it's Boris, you know that. And he says, yeah, Burris. So I don't know what was going on there exactly. But we get, instead of a world according to Bill Watts, we get a world according to Ted DiBiase. And it's pretty funny just about all the things that Mid-South has done against him and, you know, Hacksaw Duggan and why, you know, his broken hand and how Mid-South did nothing about it. And, you know, in the meantime, poor Tom Jones is just getting annihilated by Burris. So there's a neck breaker and then the second rope knee. And that is the end of Tom Jones once again. So the next week, we get King Kong Bundy versus Mr. Wrestling 2. And it's supposed to be Art Cruz, but Wrestling 2 buys the contract. because he wants to prove something and get some revenge on Bundy. And it's a good match. It really is. It's, you know, Bundy is, we talked about it. I don't love the five count gimmick, but Bundy is super, super over in May and June. And he's actually, he has a couple of really good matches this month. And this is one of them. And they're doing, everybody has picked up on this, and Bundy's really good at selling it. You know, sort of the working of the leg, trying to take one leg out of the big man. And then Mr. Wrestling too, they're just, it's actually, the knee lift is pretty well set for this great big fat dude. Because, you know, if he's leaning over and he catches one in the paunch or catches one in the chin, you can imagine him going down too, right? So that's pretty cool. But they, but in this case, the second one goes right, like Bundy's not up and he's not in the right position. It goes right into the family jewels. And that probably hurt in an entirely different way. But it did make me think, you know, about the Junkyard Dog and Mr. Wrestling 2 and the knee lift. And I was thinking about it all month as I was watching, you know, all month of this cycle, as I was watching these episodes. Wrestling 2 doesn't care. Wrestling 2 will run at you and do the knee lift because he knows he's going to do it a couple of times and he'll get it once. So he doesn't really like wait for the perfect time and to set it up. And sometimes it is perfect and it looks great. And sometimes he just does it again because the first one's kind of flat. And I don't know if that's why he does it again. Sometimes he does the 2-2-2, you know, dance and then does the final knee lift. And that seems to be, you know, on purpose. But anyway, so it did make me think that, you know, it is partially his fault for the knee lift that killed New Orleans. And, you know, obviously Junkyard Dog sells it. You can't get past that. I mean, he can't get back up and do it again because he's just done the timber and sold the move. That doesn't look like it hits very well because it hits JYD, you know, in the gut rather than in the chin. But anyway, I digress. So in this case, this match looks pretty good. And then it ends on a DQ over the top rope where Bundy basically backdrops to over the top rope. And then Wrestling 2 is given the pile driver on the floor, which is starting to become King Kong Bundy's other gimmick, as we'll see in another week or two. Now, next up, we get Tito Santana versus the Ninja. Oh, no, we get Magnum TA versus the Ninja. And, you know, talk about bad guys moving down the card. Here we go. So Magnum gets the kendo stick and at the beginning and sort of chases him off. At some point, Magnum messes up a backdrop a little bit, and we have sort of a blown spot. Yatsu is here. Yatsu comes to the ring and tries to interfere, but as he holds Magnum for the green fleen, Magnum moves and Yatsu gets the fleen instead. And then there's a nice, you know, drop kick, and then Ninja gets the atomic drop and pin. Yatsu gets drop kicked, and then Ninja gets atomic drop and pinned. And Magnum gets another big win over a, you know, what you would call a mid-level heel, you know, adding to his win over the Super Destroyer in the last cycle that we talked about. Next up, speaking of which, we get Hacksaw Duggan and the Super Destroyer. And again, we get a nice, good, solid win for the babyface over a name value heel. And not for nothing, these two look great in the ring together, size-wise and style-wise. It's almost a shame that this is not an era where they're pushing Super Destroyer, because he would be a good foil. You know, if Olympia for some reason didn't come back, then it would have been cool to make Super Destroyer the guy that messed up the masks somehow and given him a nice push. But anyway, and then given him the replacement with DiBiase in the tag team, You know, so it's DiBiase and Super D rather than DiBiase and Olympia. But anyway, so Super D and Duggan, it's a nice compliment together. And obviously it plays on the fact that Super D helped Duggan beat up Matt Bourne, you know, in the last cycle of stuff that we saw when Duggan was just leaving the Rat Pack. In this case, it's just a squash. And Duggan wins with the clothesline and then the spear. But a really good match for, you know, who these guys are and what it is. I liked it a lot. Next up, we had Rip Rogers. And I think this is our introduction to George Weingroff. I don't think we've seen him before. They do talk about him being legally blind, talk about him being a University of Chattanooga, you know, UT Chattanooga wrestler. I think they're just University of Chattanooga now. And this goes to the time limit draw, although Weingroff does get a sunset flip at the bell. Now, we are told that we are going to get next week Olympia and Boris, or as Boyd likes to say, Boris Zukov against JYD and Hacksaw Duggan, as the fans have chosen. We're also going to get Buddy Nichols from Alexandria TV, and we're going to see something else from TV. I think they said it was going to be something from Tulsa TV, but when we see it, it's not actually from Tulsa. But that is episode 195, a very exciting episode where a lot of the good guys getting a lot of big wins over named villains, and they're giving it away for free because they're setting something else up. And we will see that in just a few. As we look at episode 196, we have moved on to a new taping. This is June 8th in Shreveport. And this would have been June 11th or later for airing Around the Horn. And we start with Rip Rogers and Tim Horner. And speaking of debuts, here in the ring is Joel Armstrong. And Joel makes his refereeing debut on TV by being slow on the count. That finishes the match and makes it look not quite as impressive as it does. Although I have to say, the finish is really impressive. And you can imagine Rip Rogers and Tim Horner are going to have a good match, right? This is a good match. And Horner wins with a flying body press off the second turnbuckle. You know, he could have done it actually off the top turnbuckle, as we'll find out later in the month. But it looks really good. The only problem is Joel is a little slow in doing the count. He almost does like the world-class four count, essentially, or Memphis four count, where the first count is, you know, the referee going down to the canvas, and then he starts the three count. So in any event, next up, we have Tony Zane and Magnum TA. And this is interesting match. I was wondering, you know, who's calling this one? You know, is Magnum experienced enough to call this one? And they do a roll through spot, and then it's a little awkward. And I thought it's probably Zane that made it a little awkward. And then there's a sunset flip in the corner, and it's actually pretty good. It's a little slow. Again, I mean, it seems like they're doing the spots, but they're a little bit by the numbers. But when they go down for the sunset flip, I thought Zane kicked out way too quickly. It would have been a good spot for Magnum to get like a two count. And that's, you know, two sort of new guys in the ring. You know, Magnum's had a little bit of a run in Florida already, so I don't know how green he is really here. But they're, you know, two young guys in the ring together, and we've talked about how green Tony Zane is. But anyway, Magnum wins again with the Atomic Drop, which is where we get the episode's title. And it's funny, I keep waiting to see when the belly-to-belly gets brought into things, but we're not there yet, that's for sure. So, next up, it's funny, they told me next up was Tito Santana and Mike Vachon, and I almost didn't believe them. I had all planned out in my head, when does Tito Santana leave, and when does he start in the WWF? And we've talked about this already. You know, he's doing TV tapings, and actually he and the other Vachon, this is why it confused me so much, Butcher Paul Vachon, have already had a match on both Mid-South TV and WWF TV. during the spring and summer of 1983, right in this time. And we've already seen the Tito and Butcher. So I thought maybe they just gave Butcher a new name and they're going to show me an old match. And I figured we would figure it out if Buddy Nichols is on the call with Boyd. So I figured if Buddy is not suddenly on the call, then we'll know that they're showing us an old match. But sure enough, Tito Santana is here, and it's not Butcher. It's Mike, son of Mad Dog, who's in the ring. And I thought he did fine. It's not a very long match, and Tito wins with his step over into a bridge, you know, pin, which looks so very painful. Not unlike Adrian Street's London Deathlock, London Bridge Deathlock. Next up, we get Super D and King Kong Bundy against Denny Alberts and Craig Carson. And, you know, they finally give Super D a win, although it's Bundy that gets the five count. And Boyd very helpfully explains to us that had it been Super D, it would have been a three, but with Bundy, it's the five. And that's true. I thought that was very insightful, and I was very happy to hear that. And he also gives one of the classic Boydisms when he looks at Super D and Bundy in the ring and he says, "How big is big? How tough is tough?" And it's like, indeed, that just sums it all up, Boyd. You are 100% right. So next, we get the highlight of the month, possibly of the season, as we get Butch Reed in the ring with Reeser Bowden. And even from the beginning, it's a very heel-like Butch Reed. You know, he doesn't do the full... Well, I mean, you have to say it. The turn is verbal, but he doesn't do it right away. He starts to talk about Tony Zane and why he wasn't there and how on his worst day he could beat Tony Zane. And Tony Zane doesn't even get to talk. I think that's what he's saying. Tony Zane doesn't even get to talk in the locker room and, you know, just all sorts of things like that. And at some point, he starts to shift into Junkyard Dog. And he says that friendship doesn't put food on his table. And we start to get Junkyard Dog chants as the fans start to pick up on where this is going. And at some point, Reed says that he knows he's better than Dog. And Reeser does the eyebrows. And I put a vid cap of that, a screenshot of that up on Twitter, because it's like, if you can make Reeser do the eyebrows, you're in like Flynn in the Mid-South Wrestling Association. And Reeser does the eyebrows. And finally, Junkyard Dog comes out to answer the challenge. And if anybody listening knows the answer to this, we're going to get to in just a second. Please, please, please reach out and tell me on Twitter, tell me privately, we'll do errors and omissions. They have a conversation that I allude to in my book, you know, that myself as a white dude in America, you know, with whatever asterisks come with that, can't fully comprehend, where Junkyard Dog starts to list off all the things that he's done for Butch Reed, you know, and then says, "This is what's wrong with our people. We don't stick together. You know, we can't get ahead in life because of people like you that are nothing but," and he says the word and it's like crabs or trash or something that I don't know what the word is, so I'm not hearing it correctly. You know, if I had to bet, the word I'm hearing is crab. But anyway, whatever it is, that's when Butch Reed punches the Junkyard Dog. And they roll around on the mat like they're Missy Hyatt and Dark Journey in 1986. But it's not long, because Ted DiBiase is in the ring. And Ted DiBiase, who just last week was making fun of Butch Reed with the cast, clocks JYD, and Butch Reed gets the better of JYD. And here's the thing. What was coming up next? JYD and Hacksaw Duggan getting a title shot against Zirkoff and Olympia. Now Junkyard Dog has been laid out. So Instead, what we're going to get, well, first of all, we get some highlights of Ted DiBiase before he was wearing the cast. Well, first of all, the funny thing is, we know I was talking about maybe with Tito Santana, it's not Buddy Nichols. Well, now, after this big angle, Bill Watts has come out. We no longer have Buddy Nichols, although we'll get him back at the end of the next hour. But this is so important that Bill Watts had to come out and talk about it. And we get a world, according to Bill Watts now, about Ted DiBiase and Ted DiBiase's shenanigans and Butch Reed and how Butch Reed is like a lot of people in society today, Boyd, who are ungrateful, who don't want to wait their turn, who are blaming other people for all their problems. We're going to get a lot of that over the next couple of weeks. Until it turns a little bit and we turn it on Junkyard Dog. But anyway, so we get a little bit of that, and then we get this match that's Ted DiBiase and Charlie Cook. And it's from Houston, May 13th. And it ends actually very oddly, very, very oddly, where Jerry Usher disqualifies DiBiase for a thumb to the throat. But it happens like DiBiase is in full control of the match. Cook is actually getting the Tom Jones treatment here. And DiBiase has gotten a power slam on Cook in the interim of Usher saying something at ringside and calling for the bell. And instead of counting the pin, Usher just pats DiBiase on the shoulder and raises Cook's hand, even though Cook is flat on his back. So it's a DQ, and that leads to more Bill Watts talking about finally somebody stood up to Ted DiBiase and gave him, you know, what he had coming. But it was a weird little break, but I guess it was like a standby video clip that we had just in case we ever needed and, you know, break glass. Something weird happened, so we needed to do it. So anyway, next up is the Olympia and Zurkov, but instead of Duggan and JYD, Duggan picks Johnny Rich as his tag team partner. And this is a match that, even though I'm not here in Houston to watch this yet at age 12, I'm going to be there in a couple of weeks, and they replay this like every week for several weeks. So I saw it half the summer, and I had it on tape. So I probably rewatched it in between the weeks. And I probably, at age 12, I probably was in Houston for 6 weeks in the summertime. So I saw a lot of Houston wrestling / Mid-South wrestling that summer. So I saw this match a lot. It looms large in my mind. And probably, you know, if you guys go back and listen to my anniversary episode, Johnny Rich's Ring, it's probably why it was so surreal to me that it was Johnny Rich whose ring was in my yard when I was living in central Alabama, you know, in just outside of Prattville in the 1990s. Anyway, I digress. This match is one of those Mid-South classic matches, and Bill Watts is part of it. It's a good thing he got back, because this is the best Bill Watts kind of, where he's just driving a point home, but he's doing it so well that it just adds to the storyline of the match. And because it's him, you know, Ernie Ladd is his booker at this point. Things are going really well, but it's Bill Watts that is the final say-so, you know, three men at a table kind of thing. And so what happens is, you know, all sorts of shenanigans, the ref and double teaming, and the ref is trying to get Johnny Rich out of the ring while Duggan is wrapped up with Zurkov. Olympia puts the loaded boot, you know, the whatever it is on his boot, and goes to drop kick Duggan. But Johnny Rich pushes past the referee and takes it right in the face. And Bill Watts must have said like three times, you know, Rich sacrificed himself. He sacrificed himself. Johnny Rich sacrificed himself for Hacksaw Duggan. And then Duggan basically does Duggan at this point, which is, you know, akin to hulking up. And he's getting beat on by both of them, but then he ducks them, gives them the double clothesline, gives, you know, the spear to Zurkov, the spear to Olympia, and then, or a slam to Olympia. And then he at this point, Johnny Rich has gotten back in the ring and for some reason has climbed the turnbuckles and is sort of sitting dazed on the top turnbuckle with his feet on the second turnbuckle. And lo and behold, Duggan tags him and then grabs him and throws him onto Olympia. And it's, they actually do it, you know, for all my criticism of Johnny Rich's finishing maneuver, this is, they do it really nicely because Olympia is not on his back. He's kind of curled in fetal position, but they, you know, he's thrown onto Olympia and Olympia moves at just the right time and Rich cradles him in just the right way that it's all one sort of fluid motion and they get the three count. And now again, Bill Watts, Duggan gave Rich the win. He gave him the win. He gave Johnny Rich the win. He knew Rich sacrificed himself, so he gave him the win. And it's just, I mean, this is classic in my mind of what Mid-South is, because it's classic what Mid-South was in my memories when I was that age. And that's, I mean, I don't want to get like maudlin that we're talking about like four decades ago when, you know, I was a kid and presumably when all y'all were kids, you know, I mean, unless you're a wrestling historian that's trying to catch up or somehow a Greg Klein historian that's trying to catch up, welcome, you know, like it was a long time ago, but I can really connect with little me rewatching this all those years later, because I really vividly remember watching this as a little kid and being just fascinated with this storyline and fascinated with the way that I didn't know at the time the owner of the promotion was selling it to me. And it's great. And it, you know, obviously it's really working to get Hacksaw Duggan over as one of their top stars and, you know, within a year to be their top star. Right. So that is this episode, episode 196. And again, what a hot episode. We've only just begun. Remember, I said turn, turn, turn. The first turn is Olympia. The second turn is Duggan. This is really the third turn. And this is Butch Reed. And it replaces Olympia totally. Like we're saying goodbye to Mr. Olympia. We've got, like I said, there's a couple of weeks in July, I think. You know, we're about to say goodbye to Tito Santana. I think at the end of June, he does a job for DiBiase in Houston, and then he is off full-time to the WWF. And but here we are with Butch Reed now as the hot heel, and it is just going to get hotter over the next couple of weeks. Speaking of which, that brings us to episode 197, which would have been, again, June 8th in Shreveport. It would have aired June 18th or later, and we start this time with Bill Watts. And I was thinking the whole episode, when are they going to bring Buddy Nichols back? And they do, of course, when it gets a little more, when it gets a little low-key, they bring Buddy to finish up the hour, finish up things when Watts is has been there a long time, running things for the day. So we start with Mr. Wrestling 2 and Denny Alberts. And it's funny, Joel Armstrong is the referee and Bill Watts praises the good-looking young referee in the ring and thanks Grizzly Smith for reaching out and getting some new blood in the refereeing ranks and how good that is to sometimes have some youngsters coming up through the system. He doesn't yet say that it's his stepson. But funny to hear him speak about Joel as a good-looking young referee. Next up, we get King Kong Bundy and Tito Santana. And lest you think that this is just them burying Tito Santana, which parenthetically, Georgia seemed to do before Santana leaves them. There's like a month at least, maybe even more, of Tito doing nothing but jobs for just about everybody, like heels and baby faces alike. And then he and Brian Blair doing jobs for, you know, Matt Bourne and Arn Anderson and other tag teams. You know, I don't know how much notice Tito gave them, but boy, do they take advantage of Tito on his way out the door in Georgia. And I'm surprised there's not more of that that airs when Tito wins the Intercontinental title and then becomes such a big star at the time that Vince is going national. Anyway, so this is almost a exact parallel of last week with Mr. Wrestling 2 and King Kong Bundy. I was just about to say it's almost better in the way that they do the babyface attacking the big monster heel, because Tito is kicking his leg, he's taking him down by the leg, he's putting him in the spinning toe hold, trying to get the bridge. Bundy actually rakes Tito's eyes to get out of it, which looked good, although they don't, Watts and Boyd kind of, they kind of get it, but they kind of miss it. Anyway, but then they mess up the finish. So the finish is supposed to be exactly the same as last week, where it's Bundy, you know, backdropping somebody over the top rope. But Tito goes for a flying body press, and I don't know if this is not supposed to be the finish and Bundy thinks it is, or Bundy doesn't do his job to launch Tito, or Tito just doesn't get high enough, or Bundy's supposed to pull the rope down and he doesn't do it. But Santana hits the rope and Bundy, and it makes it look like Bundy did a good move, but it's not the finish. And the reason that you know it's not the finish is because Bundy hits Santana, Santana hits Bundy back, and they do the same spot again, only this time Bundy backdrops Santana over the top rope and gets disqualified. And then Bundy pile drives Tito Santana on the concrete. So I don't know which one of them, or is it both? And it, you know, depends on what the spot is exactly. Is Santana doing a move and Bundy thinks it's the finish and it's not? That obviously would be on Bundy. Is Bundy supposed to help and he doesn't? That's on Bundy. Is Santana supposed to clear the rope? That's a Santana thing. So I don't know. But it's actually a good match up until that point. And Bundy does pile drive Tito on the floor. And, you know, like I said, this is June 18th. By June 24th is Tito's last match in Mid-South ever. So that's kind of sad. Bye, Tito. We hardly knew you. You know, relatively speaking, we don't know you. I mean, compared to Tito other places, Tito in the AWA. I was looking, you know, obviously, you can tell, on Cage Match to figure out Tito's schedule in this era. As Tito leaves the AWA, there is a whole series of Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzel versus Tito Santana and Rick Martel matches. Do you know how good those matches must have been? I mean, for all my making fun of the AWA, shout out to the AWA fans in the house that can tell us about the High Flyers versus Martel and Santana. Wow. I mean, that's like a dream match. Anyway, and it's a dream match, like, even, you know, because Martel and Santana go on to become a good WWF tag team and WWF tag team champions. So, you know, they're like another era team that's a success later on down the line. So that's pretty cool. I was noticing that, that they have just a ton of matches before Santana leaves the AWA for Georgia in 1982, 1983. Anyway, so next up we get Butch Reed and, oh no, so first we get the recap. And the world according to Bill Watts, and then another Bill Butch Reed talk. At least they're not calling him, as I butcher the names now, at least they're not still calling him Bruce Reed, right? Anyway, so we get a big recap on all of that and everything that's happened. And then we watch a video. And at first glance, I thought it was going to be like, this is the beginning of the Joel Armstrong Watts video era. But it's not. It's done by Ed Worthington at Channel 39 in Houston. And it's set to the Atomic Dog. And so it's a Junkyard Dog video. And it's fun. It's actually good. And, you know, although they pin it on the music and we do talk about it, the fans seem to like the music when, you know, in this era when it's happening. And once they get acclimated to it, you know, the first time they like it, but they don't know it's Junkyard Dog's music. So now that they're starting to realize this is the Junkyard Dog's music, it seems to be fine. And the video itself is really good. Anyway, next we get Butch Reed. And beforehand, he, you know, get the whole Butch Reed spiel. And he wrestles Tim Horner. And it's a really good match. But it's, we get again, you know, the world according to Bill Watts. And he talks about how Butch Reed's mind must be really screwed up, how there must be a loose screw, and how he's blaming all his problems on other people. And meanwhile, Butch Reed gets a press and a slam, then the shoulder block, then a second press and a slam, then a third press and a slam. And he's just really beaten up on Tim Horner. And finally just puts a knee on Tim Horner's face and gets a very cocky pin. And there's a lot of football talk. There's a lot of talk about Central Missouri State and also some powerlifting talk. So it's funny, we now see not only why Butch Reed is here to be a heel, but we're starting to get to see what Bill Watts loves about Butch Reed, which is all this talk about his athletic career and other phases. I don't think we got rodeo talk. I'm surprised. They should bring in the rodeo talk. For this market, that would be a smart thing to do, I think. Anyway, next up we get, guess who? Buddy Nichols. And Buddy Nichols is here just in time because we have a match between Art Cruz and George Weingroff against Mr. Olympia and Boris Zirkov with Skandar Akbar. And Olympia comes out with a loaded boot and he gets it to Cruz's back and Zirkov gets the pin. Next up, we finish up the hour with Magnum TA and Rip Rogers. And it's a quick atomic drop. Again, I mean, it lights out day and night. Magnum versus Tony Zayn versus Magnum and Rip Rogers. And it's, you know, it is what it is. But you can always tell when Rip is in the ring in this era how good he is. And a lot of times with a lot of these guys, you know, the Steve Williams and Magnum TAs of the world, you can see if you watch, you know, you go back and watch now with different eyes that these guys are better in matches with Rip, even though they're the same squash matches with somebody else, you know, than they are with those somebody else's. Anyway, so they end with another May 13th Houston match. In this case, it's Mil Máscaras versus the Ninja. And they tell us that next week we will have Mil Máscaras actually in studio. And in this case, Mil Máscaras, they only show us about 2 minutes, but he's in control of the match and he wins with a flying body press from the top rope. And Paul Bosch is on commentary and he does note what a big pop the crowd has. It's funny. He says, can we go, can we see the whole crowd? Can we shoot the whole crowd? Let's see what the crowd is doing. And it's like, there's a delay and they don't. And so we don't see the crowd for a while. And then when we finally do, but you know, you can see it. They're all on their feet and standing up. It would have been nice to see it like 20 to 30 seconds earlier, but it's still pretty cool. And it's still Mil Máscaras at its, you know, at his best. And you might think to yourself in a talking heads kind of way, I wonder if that move is going to be legal in Mid-South. And so we get to episode 198. And you may ask yourself, is there a difference between jumping off the top rope and striking an opponent, and leaping off the top rope and diving onto an opponent in, say, a splash or body press-like form? And you may ask yourself, are both of these cause for disqualification in the Mid-South Wrestling Association? And I am here to tell you that apparently the answer is no. There is a dive versus jump rule, as we will soon find out when we meet Mil Máscaras in Mid-South in 1983. So we move along to episode 198, and this is another, this is now a new TV taping. This is June 22nd in Shreveport, and it would have aired like June 25th or later. And now it's just Bill and Boyd, and we get a very long early segment with Skandar Akbar from World Class with Bill Mercer. And I got to tell you, I'm not sure why they air this. It is only semi-pertinent to Mid-South. And it's about Kamala. And it is scary in a Kamala's coming back sort of way. And I guess it's better than reusing those Kamala videos to tell you that Kamala is coming back, but it's all world-class stuff. It's Bill Mercer and Akbar, and Akbar's with the Mongol, you know, Gene Lewis, and Friday, and somebody else who's not Iman Hussein, but is like an Iman Hussein Dollar General version, which is crazy, because Iman Hussein is usually like the Dollar General version of somebody else. But anyway, and finally they bring in Kamala, and Kamala promptly pushes Bill Mercer over and charges the camera. And they cut to Watts and Boyd back at the table. So I don't know what the purpose was, other than them to imply, or I guess outright tell us, that Kamala and Akbar are coming back and Devastation Incorporated is here to make things crazy again. Which is a little weird, because haven't they been here all along? Anyway, we get Butch Reed and Joe Stark, and we learn that Joe Stark has been gone for a few months because his nose was shattered. And I think we alluded to that, didn't we? Didn't we say that he took, like, wow, look at that. Like, I can't believe Joe Stark is okay. I guess he wasn't okay. So there we go, errors and omissions, we find out. But he's, you know, he's back. But, I mean, come on, he's not really back, because he gets pressed and slammed and just, you know, thoroughly jobbed out at his first match back against Butch Reed. Next up, we get a rematch. Duggan and Johnny Rich against Olympia and Zirkoff. First, we get the recap with last 2 weeks ago's match. And then we are told that DiBiase says that he no longer has faith in Zirkoff to be his surrogate with the tag team titles. He can't defend the titles yet because his doctor, Dr. Bo, has not cleared him. So Zirkoff is no longer allowed to take place in the tag team titles defenses. So this is going to be a non-title match. We get a ref bump because, of course, we do. Rich goes out to the floor. Duggan, DiBiase absolutely clobbers Johnny Rich once he goes out to the floor, hits him with the cast. In the ring, they're just 3-on-1 on Duggan. But then when Art Cruz and Tim Horner and people like that jump into the ring, DiBiase goes to take care of them. And when he does, Duggan takes Olympia and Zirkoff like they're the henchmen and runs them into each other. And then when that happens, DiBiase turns back and Duggan is ready to go. He grabs DiBiase. He takes the cast. He shatters it against the turnbuckle. And it does shatter. If they gimmicked this thing, they did great. And if they didn't gimmick this thing, they did great. It really works. And lo and behold, ah ha 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 ha. What is DiBiase wearing under the cast but his black glove? Now, I don't know exactly why this is an ah ha 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 moment, because, I mean, you know, you might tape up your broken hand before you put on the cast. And if he was wearing the glove when he broke his hand, I mean, honestly, they probably would have cut it off. But, you know, plausible? I don't know. But, I mean, what does it mean? Like, it's not really broken. And you know that because he still has his loaded glove on underneath. Anyway, they make it work, but it's a little klutzy, but it is very funny. And obviously, DiBiase takes a powder after the glove thing. And then Duggan spears Zirkoff. Then Duggan gives Johnny Rich the pin again, this time on Zirkoff. And they make note of that again, and Boyd this time is all over the fact that good old Johnny Rich has gotten a win thanks to Hacksaw Duggan. Next up, we have Mr. Wrestling 2, now billed as the national champion from that WTBS place in Georgia, and they say that he won it at the Omni. Now, here's the thing. He has not won the title yet. This is when Mr. Wrestling 2 has stolen the title from Larry Zbysko and is calling himself the champion. Not that it matters. They've made a huge, huge, huge deal about this in the wrestling magazines. And I remember it vividly. I didn't know at the time that this was Georgia in downfall, quote unquote, Although I did just watch that Dark Side of the Ring. And, you know, maybe we'll talk about some Dark Side of the Ring next episode, because I haven't really talked about it much. But anyway, we, you know, this angle in Georgia, I don't know if it didn't get over or if it wasn't thought of well, or people just didn't like Larry Zbysko and Tim Brooks as the top heels in Georgia. But anyway, Mr. Wrestling 2, it's still a couple weeks before he really wins the title from Larry Zbysko and then is gone for a little while before he comes back for the end of his Mid-South runs. But in this episode, he's wrestling Arn Anderson, and this time, finally, they talk about him as Arn Anderson. Now, Bill Watts is Bill Watts, so he does talk about how this used to be Marty Lundy, and now he's earned his name, Arn Anderson, as Ole Anderson's cousin or nephew or whatever. But that doesn't mean that, you know, he gets anything given to him in the ring, Boyd. And sure enough, he gets about three knees, and all he does in his return to Mid-South is do another job. There's also a Bundy recap at the beginning of this segment, so we will lead up to that. They do talk about how Mr. Wrestling 2 is so tough, he will take a pile driver on the concrete and come back 2 weeks later. And I thought that was interesting because I don't think Tito Santana comes back. He just goes to the WWF. So read into that what you will. I don't know if that was what Bill Watts meant or that's what anyone would infer, but maybe it is and maybe you would. Next up, we get the Junkyard Dog against Bob Roop. And this is classic, and we'll see this again in a couple weeks, Mid-South, when Junkyard Dog has taken a wound. Now he's going to be up against a top heel. From the past, in this case, happens a lot. Super D, the Grappler, Bob Roop, Bob Sweetan. Now he's going to get a clean win. And actually, they go through Bob Roop's history. They say something that was so interesting about Bob Roop and Paul Orndorff, and then Bob Roop did this to Paul Orndorff, and then Bob Roop did that to Paul Orndorff. And then, Boyd, they had a steel cage loser leave town match, and Bob Roop won it and drove Paul Orndorff out of Mid-South. And when I heard that, I thought in my head, you know, yeah, maybe Paul Orndorff did lose a fight. I don't know. But I don't believe that. I believe it was Orton. I don't know. So we'll have to see. Anyway, maybe one of these days we'll actually reach out and figure that one out. Figure out the final answer. It still looks like Orton when you look at their things. But going down the history, it is true. Paul Orndorff loses clean to Roop before he leaves town. And Bill Watts is quick to note that because, you know, Orndorff is still in Georgia at this stage, maybe disappearing, getting ready to go to the WWF. Although who knows if anybody knows that at that point in time. So this is a lot of selling for Roop. It's a 5 or 6 minute segment that's probably 90% Roop. And Roop is really doing well and really looking good. And, you know, Dog is sort of selling for him until they get to a pile driver spot. And it's interesting. Dog goes up a little too quick the first time. And they do it. And then Dog kicks out immediately. Basically no sells the pile driver. And then Roop no sells the kick out in that he doesn't really go. Like, you need Roop to fly. And Roop is not a, I'm going to take a big bump out of a kick out, I guess, guy. Because he doesn't move. He just kind of gets back up. And he tries this time to do the pile driver a second time. And Dog back body drops, you know, him out of it. And then it's, don't blink and you're in the thump. And JYD has won the match. And it's one of those classic era thumps where it's a scoop, a pivot, two steps and a drop and a bump, a big bump off the mat. You know, the very classic JYD power slam, which is very different from the DiBiase Buzz Sawyer, but still pretty effective. You know, you just like to see that sort of bounce. It makes it feel like he really got the measure of the other guy. So there we go. JYD gets a big win over Bob Roop, former North American champion. We heard all of Roop's storied history in Mid-South to set up the win. Next up, here he is, the man, the legend, the internet wrestling community's biggest villain, short of Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. You know, funny that, like, another guy who's in the stratosphere as one of the biggest stars. Austin doesn't get the hate, which he probably should, right, for being a wife abuser. The Rock gets the hate, Hogan gets the hate, Flair gets the hate, and maybe Flair should for being a drunken wife, you know, woman abuser. Hogan gets the hate, and maybe he should for being a just kayfabe carny liar. Mil Máscaras gets the hate. Oh my God, does the internet wrestling community hate him. No yob, no yob. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can point you to so many yobs, but anyway, I digress. So maybe not so many, but I can point you to jobs, definitely. And I can point you to matches where Mill sells and puts people over. Now, I will say this parenthetically, and then we'll get on. I did see the Mill and Dos Karras against Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen from Japan match that everybody was buzzing about on Twitter for a little while. And it's hysterical. As Brody and Mill basically break down and won't sell, but it's very classic wrestler versus fighter, where the fighter gets frustrated because Mill keeps neutralizing Brody by grabbing a limb and limiting his ability to strike. And, you know, it's a stalemate. It's very boring from that standpoint. Nobody gets a blow, you know, but Mill keeps frustrating Brody and they're just not working together. And finally, obviously, Dos Karras does the job. Because Brody and Hansen are bigger stars than Mill and Dos, even though Mill is a huge, huge star. And there's no way Mill's doing the job in that match. Anyway, here we go. Mill and Super D. And this is really quick, but it's very, very good. And it ends with the top rope flying body press. And there we learn the rule even has a name. It's the Harley Race rule. I guess it refers to Harley Race doing the diving headbutt off the top rope, which is weird because is that a dive? Or is that a jump? Or is that a strike? But anyway, that's what we're told. So this is very similar because Mil Máscaras is not jumping onto his opponent. He's diving. This is the dive, not jump rule in Mid-South. And I don't think we see it for very long because I don't think Mil stays. I don't think Mill and Bill Watts are meant to get along, although we will see Mill on some big shows later on down the line, especially in New Orleans and in Houston. So Mill wins the match, and we move on to the standby match, which is Tony Zane and Tim Horner. And, you know, you guys are going to know my immediate thought in this match, two baby faces, both a little green, both very young, who is calling the match? And it's, if it's Tim Horner, you know, it's, I think that's probably what it is. And it's a better match than you would expect. And actually, instead of it going to the time limit draw, which you might expect, Tim gets the win. But it's after a knee drop. It's, you know, they say, they call it a cradle in a Johnny Rich sort of way. But it's, you know, I mean, it's just he covers him after the knee drop. So that was interesting. And that's where we end it. But the one thing that we do find out is that in 2 weeks, we're going to get Dusty Rhodes. And next week, Grizzly Smith has ruled. He's angry. Ted DiBiase has obviously been faking his injury. He's not injured. So we're going to get that match that we were promised a long time ago. The tag team title showdown. Junkyard Dog and Hacksaw Duggan against Ted DiBiase. No longer with a cast on his hand. And Mr. Olympia. And that is where we leave it for June 1983 in the Mid-South Wrestling Association. I'm only over by about 10 minutes, so I will post this on the 15th once my cycle renews. I'm a little wordy lately, but I hope you guys like it. I love it. I'm having a good time. I'm really in my element right now with the concert and the film and the wrestling talk and the, I don't know if you've seen some of the newspaper.com stuff I've been putting up. You know, if you're on newspaper.com, just search JYD book and see my searches. But I've really felt good about life in general and my family life and my friend life and my work life. So, you know, knock on wood that it just keeps going and praise God for all the good stuff and also for helping through all the bad stuff. And we're coming up on the anniversary of my brother's death. So I'll be thinking about that over the next couple of weeks. So say a prayer for me and our family as we deal with that. But I love you guys for listening. I love you guys for being fans of Old School Territory Wrestling and for having an audience to talk to about it, you know, both in podcast form and in the internet wrestling community form. So thank you guys. And I will see you again at the end of the month for our usual wrestling Memorial Day tribute. This time as we look at some of the war service and war records of wrestlers. Last year, we did this great deep dive into Paul Bosch's book, The Road to Hurtgen, which I think I'm pronouncing right, but may not. You know, the German town where he fights a very famous battle in a very important time in the Allies' taking of Germany during World War II, and all the amazing medals that he won and all the commendations that he won. So this time, at the end of the month, we will take a deep dive into some of the other wrestlers that served, whether it was during that era or during other eras. So we will do that at the end of the month. Thank you guys for listening. This was episode 48, Atomic Drop, of Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk. I'll see you again soon.